Mama WeGo.
With Jeremy Scott.
From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon, somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I am Jeremy Scott, and good evening. Welcome to the program. Early December, and we can already feel the seasons changing. I don't know about you, but the season's definitely changing out here in the Pacific Northwest. We had our first snowfall of the year this past week. I know a lot of other areas seeing it much deeper and worse than we had it here, but it is the season, and it just makes it that much more mysterious when we talk about these subjects under those conditions. Imagine this, being inundated with calls from citizens reporting strange events that you as a member of law enforcement or a public official cannot explain. So much so that you as the sheriff or the mayor resort to calling in a team to investigate seemingly paranormal or unexplained events. Now, through our discussions on this program, we know that just about any type of location can be occupied by spirits who are holding on to something. I mean, it is a quite natural process to die. That is one of the inevitable things about each and every one of our journey. And people have reported encountering the departed for hundreds of years. We also know that some areas are more bound to others, more bound than others, to have unexplained or even paranormal activity. And the reasons for that are many. It could be that they have emotional ties to that location. It could be a residual haunting. I guess it could be a spirit just traveling through. The list goes on and on, but we know that these entities definitely occupy locations for a variety of reasons. One of these places just might be Butte, Montana, which is a city that is largely known for its mining operations, a place where something is said to be unsettling, to say the least. Now, I mentioned officials such as the mayor and the sheriff. That's Sheriff Ed Lester, who's of Silver Bow County, and mayor or chief executive, as he's known, J.P. Gallagher of Butte and Silver Bow, Montana. Those are the officials who had been primarily dealing with this activity, at least the reports from citizens or, in some cases, constituents. The people who voted you in now are coming to you to say, hey, there's some strange things going on here in town, and I would like you to investigate. Well, of course, that can only go so far before you have to really recruit people who have the expertise to at least know where to start to investigate on this. So they brought in a paranormal investigator who we all know, Dave Schrader, also tech expert Katie Stafford, and psychic medium Cindy Kaza, to investigate and also to kind of restore order within the town. But of course, as we know, sometimes these things don't always go to plan. So I'm glad to have here from Ghosts of Devil's Perch and from the Paranormal 60. You know him as Dave Schrader. Good evening, Dave.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me this evening.
Good to have you here. So Ghosts of Devil's Perch, tell us about the history of the town. I mentioned briefly that it is or was a mining town. Are there current operations still going on there in Butte, or is this a thing of the past?
You know, I believe it's pretty much a thing of the past because it was mined first for its gold, then its silver, then they had these huge, massive copper deposits. But it's now more expensive to mine copper than the copper itself is worth. So it really kind of dried up for them. And this series, Ghosts of Devil's Perch, everybody's like, Well, listen, in season one, it was Ghosts of Shepherdstown. Season two, the follow-up, Ghosts of Shepherdstown. In season three, it was Ghosts of Morgan City. Why isn't this Ghosts of Butte? Devil's Perch obviously has a cooler jive to it for the paranormal realm. But the concept was that it was the Devil's Perch because they dug so deep in mining that area that they dug below hell. And the town was also overrun with greed and gambling, prostitution, a lot of drinking. So it was kind of the Devil's Perch over this purgatory on earth, if you will, and became a massive, massive city. Oh, I think they boasted over 100, almost 200,000 people at one point.
So literally they dug themselves a tunnel to hell from mining the heck out of the area.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly.
And pissed off the devil.
Well, you know, the concept is that, again, just that they dug so deep that they were now below the devil's perch in hell. But not so much they pissed off the devil. I think it was the fact that you've got this town. And when we were sent into this, you know, you go in not really knowing why these hauntings are taking place, what's taking place. And then each episode of the show, and it's on Travel Channel and Discovery Plus, for your listeners and followers, Ghost of Devil's Perch. We were called in. The sheriff, Ed Lester, great guy. He wants to take care of his people, wants to protect his people. He knows the haunted history. He's not a believer, but what can he do to bring peace to his community? So, you know, along with J.P. Gallagher, the mayor of the city, they decided to allow us to come in and try to help bridge that gap and answer questions that law enforcement, you know, would fail to be able to take any further. And we were really gifted with that opportunity to go in there and look this through. And, you know, what we found was a lot of this blood curse was to do with all the people who died building the city into the great metropolis that it once was. Everybody remembers the heroes, the town settlers, the copper kings, all the big, bold, brass people. But they forget on whose backs this town was built. The blood, sweat, and tears of all those people that lost and sacrificed their lives so that others could become rich and powerful and be remembered throughout history. The spirits lost their way, and they want to be remembered.
So we're talking about maybe miners who have passed, but also those who were caught up in some of the corruption and the greed as well, mm-hmm. who met their demise, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there was a wide swath of different personalities and spirits that we encountered during the course of our investigation. We were there for 3 months solid and got to investigate and talk to the townspeople. And, it's one of those weird moments, and I've mentioned it before, but like, you know, I was on the TV show, The Holzer Files, where we reinvestigated the original case files of Dr. Hans Holzer. Those are also available on Travel Channel and Discovery Plus for your listeners, The Holzer Files. And what's different is, you know, he was called into different areas where there was one standout location in the area that was well known and haunted, and not necessarily a haunted area, but a haunted home, haunted business, haunted building. And the difference is in Butte, Montana, everywhere you go, somebody has a ghost story to share. Even people who come up and be like, oh, what are you guys in town filming that ghost show? Yeah, I don't even believe in that crap. But, you know, when I was a kid, and then they'd launch into a ghost story. So it's funny to me because even those that claim to not believe had an experience that they could not logically or scientifically explain away. And the entire town was just kind of drenched in the blood of the people that had built it, and the corruption and loss and sadness and heartbreak. And, you know, millions were won and lost at the track and in the bars, you know, there was gambling, there was all. So it was this never ending cycle of feeding the negative energy there.
Yeah, a lot of negative energy, I would have to imagine, an energy mm-hmm. that probably still exists today. For instance, I understand that there are some plans, or were some plans, maybe is a better way of saying it, to revive parts of Butte, but it seems like something is getting in the way of the actual building.
You know, it's interesting. History, I believe, releases its ghosts so that we don't forget where we came from. And in the name of evolution and business, the good town of Butte was trying to refurbish, and they were going through basically a citywide reclamation of their buildings and properties. And, you know, we've heard oftentimes the legend is that when you're kind of refurbing your house and rehabbing it, that can kind of stir things up in the spiritual realm. Well, you're changing energetic patterns, you're shifting known quantitatives and making things different. Well, imagine doing that on a grand scale of changing an entire town and all of the spirits there that I think that we're not necessarily at rest, but we're comfortable in the place that they recognized. And when it began changing and tearing up, I think the spirits thought that with this new facelift and this new change, we're just going to fall aside. We'll be forgotten to time and tide. And they demanded to be heard. So many of them were stepping forward to share their stories. And we were lucky enough to be the ones that were there to collect those stories, hear their pleas, and do what we could to help.
So, Dave, speaking of being heard, you obviously had some vocal encounters with these entities. Can you tell us about a few of those?
Sure. Well, we, you know, there's different types of audible phenomena. There's something called the DVP, which not many people are as familiar with. That's direct voice phenomena. So that means you're physically hearing the voices calling out. And then there is EVP, electronic voice phenomena, where we may be hearing those voices with the aid of an audio recorder or a spirit box. And upon playback, you ask a series of questions and play back the recorder, and there are ghostly voices that appear on the recording that were not heard audibly. So are they affecting the electromagnetic field in which the recorder is being influenced? That's what the common theory is. So we were catching and capturing responses at every location we would visit, some very, very clear, some muddled, some just screams of pain and misery.
Yeah, I imagine. And those had to be hard to hear at times, right?
Oh, very. We did an experiment in one of the locations known as the Hennessy Mansion. And it was a kind of a sensory deprivation experiment known as the Gansfield Estes Method. So basically, my eyes were covered so that I wouldn't be influenced by anything I could see or experience in the room. I had earbuds in that were tied to a spirit box radio. And then I had headphones on, noise canceling headphones. And the spirit box was being fed through my headphones, the earbuds. And KD Stafford, the techie on our show, would ask questions of the spirits, and I would call out whatever answers were coming through the spirit box. And I had a very emotional experience with that, probably one of the most emotional experiences I've ever had, because as we were engaging with the spirits, it was like layers of spirits that were coming through. There was definitely a very strong presence of a man who seemed to kind of be almost controlling the situation. I don't know how else to say it other than that. He felt very much like he was in charge of the spirits of this realm. Then there was a child that I could hear calling out for help. And then I believe we were living a moment. I was hearing what sounded like hundreds of people being killed in what I believe was a mine collapse, and only later to find out about one of the big mine collapses that took place there in town. So it was impactful and emotional, and I'm in one of the most haunted buildings in town, and I'm hearing these screams and cries for help, and it affected me deeply. It broke me down emotionally. I was so raw. When the experiment was over, I literally, the director just kind of, you know, put his arms around me, and I just sobbed uncontrollably on his shoulder for about 15 minutes. It was so much to take in. And the pain you could hear in the voices of these spirits crying out from the other side. I'd never, ever experienced anything like that in my entire life.
Wow. People don't understand the emotional impacts that these encounters have until you've actually gone through them, right, Dave? Is that what you found throughout your years?
Exactly. You know, there's one thing to kind of sit from the comfort of your own home, which is where many of us like to be, and watch these things unfold on TV, living vicariously through the people that are doing the investigation. So you get the excitement of watching our reactions and the excitement of the evidence that we're able to reveal, but the safety of not having to be there alone in the dark by yourself. So a lot of people really enjoy that, but you know, sometimes you start to get desensitized to it. And you forget what it's really like. You know, a lot of people that watch these paranormal shows on TV, they see very clearly in the rooms that we're in, but we cannot. But they're getting the false sense of security because the night vision light is lighting up in IR, that's infrared. We can't see that with our naked eyes. So the room is black to us. You're seeing a well-lit room. And we feel very confined, and it's very unusual and kind of disarming at times, because you can sense things moving around you or hear things walking up behind you, and you can't tell if it's one of your fellow investigators or something else entirely until it's right there with you. And that's a very disarming moment and a disarming thought.
So, Dave, when you went into this, what understanding did you have about the history of these events there?
All I knew was that the town was having some issues. People were seeing ghosts and having paranormal encounters in their homes, on their property, in their places of business. And of course, I've heard of this before. We've gone to haunted locations before, and you know, I've appeared on 7 or 8 episodes of Ghost Adventures and an episode of Paranormal State and programs like that. And I did the Curse of Lizzie Borden shock doc on Travel Channel and Discovery Plus. So I'm used to going into these locations to investigate these claims to see if we can give any maybe non-paranormal excuses for what's taking place there and try to ease or appease the people. And in a lot of the cases, you know, we can point them to natural effect that may be seeming to be paranormal. And then when we peel back those layers and realize that, okay, this is more than just imagination, we're hearing things, we're seeing things. This, you know, the medium that we work with, Cindy Kays, is very good, very proficient at what she does. And when she's picking up on things that we can then take back to a historian and they have to dig through the archives to find that bit of information, it's pretty powerful, you know, and then they're able to align and go, wow, Cindy was dead on. We did find somebody who was shot here. There was a blood feud between two men. And it's an aspect or an element of history that had escaped, you know, the future. It was reported on 100, 200, 150 years ago, but nobody speaks of it anymore. Because again, all we talk about in history is the winners. The losers are very easily forgotten. You remember most of the teams that won the Super Bowl, but sometimes you're hard pressed to remember who they even played that year. Well, that's the same way with history. And a lot of these names became, you know, kind of lost to time.
And often we hear of the activity, but we don't really understand how it affects the individual. And this obviously is not a situation where, you know, even while the stories have been around for decades, as you mentioned, it is still obviously plaguing the town to this day. Were people feeling for their safety? Did it come to that extreme?
Yeah, there were instances where that took place. You know, when we visited the Fink house, the Fink family, she awoke to see this dark specter over her pressing down on her. She felt as though it was almost choking her. And we've heard of this as like the old hag syndrome, which you can understand neurologically and scientifically. We can explain away most cases of that. However, in this case, she was wide awake when it occurred. And, you know, it dove through the wall behind her headboard. We went in to investigate. Cindy walked in the house and immediately picked up on a darker presence there. We captured something in the closet and it opened the door on its own. And, you know, so there was some holy beep moments that took place. And we give, you know, the ghosts their due. We give them their respect and just tell them that we're there to try to help put things right, understand what the story is that's missing so that we can tell the world through this show what it was and who they were and why they were an important element to the history of this town. And that's, you know, the way we treated it. But there were times people felt endangered. I did. I had an experience at a place called the Cabbage Patch, this old shanty, part of the shanty town that they've actually saved. It was an old, like the homeless dwellings. And they've kept it to give their students at the high school and people in the community an idea of what it was like to really live in the rough times there. And I was having an experience in one of the cabins with Cindy as she was tapping in mediumistically, making a connection. All of a sudden, I felt like something tore through me. I thought I dropped to the floor screaming. I thought I was having a heart attack or my appendix had ruptured. One of those two things had occurred. And then thankfully, it subsided. I was sent to the hospital that night and checked. And then we find out the next day through the historians that there was a gentleman by the name of Richard Sims. He was an African-American man who had fallen in love with the preacher's daughter, the white preacher's daughter. And when she was done with him and the love was no longer there for him, she tried to break it off. And when he wanted to continue and follow her, and it wasn't a stalking thing, but a pleading for his love, she shot him. And I believe that I walked into what's known as a place memory. And I took that hit. I felt it. I felt the pain and anguish of the shot. And I felt what it was like to be alone and dying.
Just as some tragic memories, but these are real things that happen in the course of an investigation in a ghost town. Butte, Montana. Ghosts of Devil's Perch. Dave Schrader with us from the Paranormal 60 podcast. We'll be back with him right after this. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest.
Paranormal News. NASA's Artemis 1 spacecraft, it's on its 10-day return home, no doubt recording some spectacular pictures and videos of its flight. The Orion spacecraft, that is without a crew, is targeted this Sunday for splashdown in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of California. NASA's Shaniqua Vereen says the burn lasting 1 minute and 45 seconds gave Artemis 1 the boost it needed to get back to Earth.
With a nominal distant retrograde orbit departure burn, Orion will leave its distant retrograde orbit, preparing Orion for a second lunar flyby, an Earth insertion burn, and finally preparation for re-entry and splashdown planned for December 11th.
It launched on November 16th, and mission managers say it performed exactly as intended. Artemis 2, which will carry astronauts into orbit around the moon, is set for 2024, with astronauts returning to the moon as early as 2025. The program marks NASA's highly anticipated return to the moon, with plans to establish a sustainable lunar outpost manned by a crew near the South Pole by 2030. I'm George Henry, Paranormal News.
We've been getting a lot of strange calls. Calls that I can't explain. They're calling us because there's something out there that scared them.
Our job now is to figure out how we can stop this before things get really bad for the town of Butte.
The truth is far more abnormal than we want to believe. You're headed somewhere between abnormal and paranormal, into the paranormal.
I'm Jeremy Scott, you know his voice, Dave Schrader. Paranormal 60 podcast, Ghosts of Devil's Perch, The Holzer Files, Ghost Adventures, and so much more. We're talking about Butte, Montana, about the mining town, and about some of its seemingly haunted history. I'm more comfortable with the moniker, I guess, unexplained, than I am with haunted or paranormal. What about you, Dave? Or have you uncovered evidence to label it either of those other terms? Or is it just a word and it means all the same?
And to me, it all kind of means the same. You know, like the word ghost, it is not definable by one term. There are many different elements to what a ghost may be. and what it is that we're dealing with in a haunting. So, you know, whatever people feel comfortable with. Some people refuse to say haunted. They want to talk about anomalous. I mean, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Whatever your comfort level is. You'll notice that in two seasons of the Holzer Files, one season of Ghost of Devil's Perch, we never discuss it being demonic in any way, shape, or form. That is not a term I'm comfortable with because I feel that it's used and bandied about a little too freely when I believe that sometimes just an angry, lashing out spirit is nothing more. It wouldn't, you know, it'd be like calling your child a demon, which, listen, I've got a lot of kids. I know that there are days you wonder, but it'd be calling your child a demon because they lashed out and threw something at home. Does that make them a demon? No, it just makes them a little jerk, right? Well, that's what we deal with the spiritual realm sometimes too. You're just getting a ghost that's kind of a jerk.
503-506-0396 is our number here on the program, 503-506-0396. That works in inside or outside North America. On Skype, it's ITP51, and we will have open lines in the next hour as well. Dave Schrader, my guest. And Dave, there's evidence that whatever you were dealing with here did not want you there. Is that correct?
Well, there's an element that did not want us there, but I think that most of the spirits were coming forth because they knew that we were there to help. And I think they were calling out, they were begging for somebody to hear their plea. So I don't think that, you know, the overarching bit of the story was that that something didn't want us there. I think that the one, which is the main spirit that was kind of inciting this paranormal riot, if you will, he wanted someone to pay attention. He wanted someone and demanded the attention of the townspeople of Butte and of our team. I think that there may have been elements, and you know, now that we've peeled back this first layer of history, it doesn't mean that other spirits won't come forward that'll be very mad that we messed with things and changed things and recognized things. And you know, every villain is the hero of their own story. Guys and gals that came forward in this last series that told us their stories, they were victims of their circumstances. But we don't know what their real stories were. Is it that they also had people under their heel that may come forward now to reveal the history about the person that we helped last time? It's we never know. It's a never-ending cycle. We're hoping to get another season. I know there is still some paranormal activity taking place there. And we'd love to go back and examine it and see what we could do. And I think, you know, continue to help the people. I feel a lot of love for the town of Butte, and I would love to go back there and continue to work with them.
But in at least one case, I think there was an EVP that did tell you to get out.
Oh, in this field, everywhere you go, there are spirits telling you to get out. You know, so to me, that's kind of like the being in sales, being told no the first time, you know, never accept the first no. It always, you know, you just haven't gotten them to reveal what they really want. And sometimes they're hurt and wounded, and they've had, you got to remember that this town also lives as a kind of a mecca of hauntings. People go there to try to communicate with the spirit realm. And a lot of them are weekend warriors, and they don't really go there with the intention of helping. They just want to have a thrill. So sometimes I think these ghosts are pissed and they're, no, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want just another idiot in here asking me stupid questions. And then they leave and nothing changes for us. Our goal was to listen and help change things.
You shared with us one of your painful experiences earlier, but there were other experiences, some violent encounters, at least one that comes to mind. Was one of your crew members stabbed?
That was me. I thought I had had a heart attack. It felt like a stabbing sensation, a stabbing pain through me. And it was only after we did our research and due diligence that we realized that Richard Sims had been shot in that location. And I think I walked into that place memory.
Okay, so nobody actually got stabbed, thank goodness.
No. Thank God. No, there was no actual attacks by any lunatics out there. But, you know, it's you deal with different elements. You know, in the Hennessy mansion, one of the gentlemen that we came into contact with, Herb Sargent, he was a person that lived there at one point. And the voices in the walls used to tell him things and drive him crazy. Now it sounds like, okay, well, this sounds like the ramblings of an insane person. But he claimed that the voices were coming from within the walls. In that room, people refuse to stay. They don't know the history of it. They walk in and they feel dark and oppressive and they don't want to be there. Was Herb just a little bit more tapped in? And Herb eventually gave in to those voices and they told Herb basically that you have to rid this town of its vices and, you know, sex and prostitution and gambling. So he took a gun and went down to a local adult bookstore and attempted to shoot the manager. The manager ended up getting the gun away from him. Herb took off and ended up being shot to death by the police. So in that instance, the paranormal did influence him to the point where he did something violent in a human form. The spirit cried out to us in there and said, I got Herb, I'm going to get you too. It was a threat. But I believe that was that darker overlord spirit I talked about earlier, that the kind of watches over the other spirits there. And I think that it was taking some joy in the fact that it was in control, or letting us believe it was in control.
You mentioned earlier non-paranormal explanations, which I think is important here. As an investigator, you've been to a lot of locations, some that are haunted, some that aren't haunted. And you've got to decide, in your opinion, in your team's opinion, what's going on here. So what are some of the explanations that you've encountered that you can say some of this activity that is not paranormal, what's actually going on?
Well, you know, a lot of the tools, when the TV show Ghost Hunters came out, and even Most Haunted and Ghost Adventures at the beginning, a lot of the tools that they brought into an investigation, the big public outcry was, that tool's not made for ghost hunting. Well, obviously, you know, there aren't many tools at that point that were.
Right, yeah.
But what they were bringing were tools that could sense energy, sense EMF, electromagnetic force or electromagnetic fields. And what they were doing were looking for scientific things that make the paranormal seem real. In a perfect, for instance, one investigation, this wasn't on the show, this is a private investigation. This woman would wake up around 3 o'clock in the morning every morning with this buzzing headache and this brutal sensation that there was something oppressive and in the room with her. And she was terrified. She'd wake up paranoid, terrified. And, you know, the recommendation came, well, the clock radio you have next to your head looks like it's from the 1970s. And she's like, yeah, I've had that for a long time. Would you mind moving it across the room so it's not on the nightstand directly next to your head? And she kind of laughed about it and said, okay. And we moved the clock radio across the room, and lo and behold, her problems went away. When testing the clock radio, it had a lot of EMF leakage because it was not well shielded when it was created back in the 60s and 70s. So it was putting off a lot of energy, a lot of EMF that was affecting her and messing, you know, we're a magnetic field ourselves, right? The brain is electrical impulses, and this thing was creating distortion and disturbances. So that was proving that there wasn't necessarily something paranormal going on, as there was something normal that was just affecting her energy and her sleep and her brain patterns. So once we removed that and put it across the room, that energy problem stopped. Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters told a great story. You know, they went to this house. This old woman was having a lot of problems with the supernatural. She was terrified. She felt there were things there and that they were stalking her in her own home. And they took this very seriously. And they had her leave for the evening as they did an investigation. And at one point, you know, 2-3 in the morning, they're a little snack hungry and there's a cookie jar on the counter. And they think, well, you know, maybe we can have a cookie. And they took the lid off, and there, packed to the top with marijuana, was this cookie jar. Well, that might answer why grandma's paranoid. It feels like people are watching her. She's, you know, she was smoking weed. So that very well could have been part of what was there. So that was, you know, finding a natural explanation for supernatural, I guess perception.
What does weed enhance the haunting?
No, I think it enhances your paranoia factor. Oh, and, okay. And God knows, at her advanced age, what other medicines she was on that the marijuana could have been interacting with, creating optical illusions, auditory hallucinations. You know, there's a lot of things you have to take into effect. So there's a lot of things like that you have to examine when you do a full investigation, and understanding the people you're working with, understanding the location you're working with, understanding the age of it. You know, a lot of these places are over 100-150 years old. They've got the old piping. The house is settled, so at night, if you think about this, and I don't know if you know this, but most times people recognize the paranormal is around 3 in the afternoon and around 3 at night, 3 in the morning. It has nothing, in my opinion, to do with the Antichrist or the time that Christ was crucified at 3 p.m. and 3 a.m. being the opposite, which is when the demons come out to play to mock the Holy Trinity. That all seems kind of weird to me. But what I do know is that 3 o'clock in the afternoon is about the peak of heat for the day. And then it starts to cool down. So you're going to hear the popping of wood and windows and things in your house moving. And then at night, 3 in the morning is about when it gets to the coolest point. And then you're going to hear the popping of wood and what sounds like footsteps and movement. And, that's when you're going to have some naturally occurring sounds in your home that can, appear to be one thing when it's really just the house settling. Knowing what kind of pipes you have, knowing what kind of things you can, a lot of those old piping, they can create almost like a static charge when the water's rushing through it. At least that's how it's been explained to me by a few plumbers. So if that's the case in these old pipes, you might just be amping up, giving a template of energy for the paranormal to occur. Or it could be affecting and impacting other electronics in the house that is, then affecting you. So that's why we have to take a look at a lot of different aspects of the house. And, a lot of that's the boring stuff you don't see on TV. We film an episode, takes about 5 days, and it's filming 12 to 14, sometimes up to 16 hours a day. And that all gets cut down 5 days, it's roughly, let's just call it 100 hours of footage that gets cut down to 42 minutes of airtime.
Wow.
So nobody really wants to watch me walking around in the building, taking measurements of the pipes and, checking all the electrical sockets and doing all that, because that's boring. People tune in because they want to see us get scared and jump, and they want to catch us with the EVPs and the curtains moving on their own or something like that. They don't want to see us just walking around in the basement. And listen, before your listeners attack me and go, "Well, I do. I'm the guy that wants to see that." I've been doing podcasts for 17 years, and how many people beg for the science? Why don't we talk about the science? You never talk about the science. What could this be? So when I've had science on, I can literally sit there and watch people drop off the live stream by the thousands. So they think they want it until they get it. TV is for entertainment's sake. So we pare it down to the entertainment elements of the show. You just don't get to see all the boring parts and all the parts of us just sitting around with our thumb up our butt waiting for something to happen. That's boring.
Absolutely. And as far as those explanations, are there places, locations, investigations, or cases, I guess is the better way of saying it, that you wished you would have had, a little bit more time to rule certain things out?
Well, you always wish you had a little bit more time, even in the cases you feel like you fleshed it out pretty good. There's never enough time to fully understand and get everything you want out of a location. Going back, there's a few that I'd like to test a few different theories in, and maybe push the boundaries of science by charging up a location, electromagnetic charge up, if you will. Does that template create something that's easier for the spirits to be seen and heard? So, the concept too, can we delete an electromagnetic field or an energy pattern that appears to be a ghost? If it's truly an electromagnetic visual aspect or conglomerate of that energy, if I take a degaussing gun and I rub it on the door frame where the ghost is seen to come in and go, does that remove its ability to pass that threshold? If I point it directly at an apparition, will it erase the apparition. And then you have to wonder, well, what are we doing? Is that a good thing too? Because if that is a fully formed consciousness and I'm now disrupted it and blown it into particles or erased it altogether, did I kill a ghost? Right. And then the right to afterlifers are going to be knocking on my door. There's a lot of cool concepts and thoughts and stuff out there that I'd always love to go back and try at some of these locations.
Your defense would have to be you can't kill anything that's already dead.
As far as we know, we still have not. I don't believe we've really fully articulated what is life. And when does death actually occur? Because there are scientists constantly proving that death the body may not be as dead. Remember from Princess Bride, he's only mostly dead, right? I think that, you know, there are elements and sparks, and sometimes these doctors will try something and it brings people back fully normal, not brain damaged, not physically damaged. So I don't think we've even really fully detailed what is death yet. And death of the physical form, does that equate to death of consciousness? Now they've now realized that the brain probably continues to function up to 9 minutes after the body expires. So there is a consciousness. And here's a mind blower. In that 9 minutes, are you then aware you're dead?
Yeah, if we could do an examination on somebody in that 9 minutes, I'm certain that might give us some more answers to solving this whole equation. What do you say, Dave?
You know, I don't know that I want to be the guy to find that out until it's my time way, 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 way down the line. I'd like to hit about 100. Maybe once I make it to the age of 100, you know, then I'll volunteer to let them load me up. But let's see. You know,
I'm thinking right anything now, I'm over 80 is just painful.
Tell that to Harrison Ford, who's what, 82 and filming Indiana Jones 5? You've got a lot of 80-year-olds. The 80 is the new 60, it seems. You know, if you can get to 80. I don't know. You've got Bruce Springsteen, 73 years old, just put out a new album. He's going to release 5 more albums in the next year. You know, a lot of these guys, they don't, I don't think they know that they're 73. I'm 55. There's days I wake up and I think, how can I do it one more day? How can I do it? Because my back is killing me and my knees are killing me. But, you know, it all straightens out in the end.
How many spirits do you think that your team encountered in your investigation on Ghosts of Devil's Perch? I know you had one spirit in particular, Molly. Were you able to put some names, though, to some other spirits?
Sure. We had names to some of the spirits. Some we kept off the air because their family members are still in town. And out of respect for existing family members, and maybe the aspersions it might cast on them, you've got to be really cautious with how we do that. Because just because they're dead, it doesn't mean we can just throw and heap something on them and say, well, they did this. They're not there to defend themselves. We can't give them their time in court, so you have to be very cautious. But there were spirits that we came into contact with and we believe identified themselves. And, you know, then to me, I just think you have to be respectful of the living and the dead in those moments, if that makes sense.
Well, I know the answer to this question. You can't say if there's going to be any more Ghosts of Devil's Perch, but you can tell us if there's any other projects or public appearances that you're going to be involved in.
You know, I'm all over the place. I love to go out and travel and see the world. I have, I'm doing an event in Egypt with listeners and followers of the paranormal. And if you would like to get out from behind the TV and actually enter the fray, you can come out with me to Egypt. February, we're going to be going out there for, I think it's 11 days, 10 nights, 11 days. And we're going to investigate the pyramids. We're going to investigate Howard Carter's home, the gentleman that found King Tut and King Tut's tomb. We're going to be there for the 100th anniversary of the opening of King Tut's tomb. So it's going to be an amazing time. And we're going with 30 people. I think we've got 26 people. So we still have 4 spots still open. You can get information about that at darknessevents.com. Later on in the summer, July, I'm going to Germany and Prague with listeners and followers of the paranormal. And I've only got 2 spots left open for that. And then I'm going to be visiting closer to home. I'll be out in California at the Fear Fair, and that comes up in January 13th, 14th, 15th in San Bernardino. But if people are interested in catching up with me, all they have to do is just check out darknessevents.com, darknessevents.com, or listen to the Paranormal 60 podcast.
Dave Schrader from Ghosts of Devil's Perch and Paranormal 60. We so appreciate you coming on into the Paranormal. It's great having you here.
Thank you so much for having me, and have a safe night.
You too. Ghost Town, our program tonight. And we've got open lines coming up for you, so the phone number's coming up.
Here, Paranormal News with George Henry, exclusively on Into the Paranormal. And see the reports on our YouTube channel. Into the Paranormal internationally on Skype at ITP51 or call from North America and Canada at 503-506-0396.
I am Jeremy Scott. Thanks to Dave Schrader for hopping on board the Into the Paranormal train tonight. Good to talk with him from the Paranormal 60 podcast. And, of course, Ghosts of Devil's Perch, only time will tell whether or not a second season is to come of that show. It's now open lines, though, at 503-506-0396, anywhere inside or outside North America. That number will work up through Canada and down through the States, and I'm not sure quite where else, but we have Skype. For those of you internationally who've been dying to get a hold of me, it's ITP51. Or if you're on the website listening tonight, just click the Skype button and it will do all the dirty work for you. What I've been keeping my eye on of late has been the situation there in North Carolina with the power grid. You know, we've been talking about the power grid for some time here on the program for, in fact, the last 2 years, we've been taking that preparedness aspect on the program, getting you prepared for what seems more and more inevitable by the minute, by the hour, by the day. And that is, we can not trust the infrastructure to withstand from one day to the next. I mean, an entire county here was without electricity for days. We've talked about how vulnerable the grid is to hackers. And in some cases, there have been attacks on power grids. Very scary circumstances. Ransom being paid, primarily with crypto, basically. But now we have an actual attack from an armed gunman. I know that sounds weird. Gunman. And armed is kind of redundant. An armed individual, from what they say was a high-powered rifle, fired at least 24 rounds at this substation. Actually, two substations in North Carolina. At least that's how many shell casings they found at the scene of where this happened. And I'm just wondering if this were to happen somewhere near you, are you prepared? And I don't mean to be on the preparedness beat once again, but it just goes to show that, you know, you cannot rely to being able to turn on that switch. If you're relying on oxygen, if you're relying on any sort of refrigeration, or maybe an electric vehicle and you need that to go about, and you can no longer go about, these are real world problems that folks face on a daily basis because of situations like this. I can safely say, well, that my opinion is that this should be classified as a terrorist attack, in my opinion. When you shoot up a power plant and you take out most of an entire county of power for several days, that, I believe, is an act of terrorism. I don't think I'm speaking out of character saying that this is a terrorist attack. This person, whoever did this, had obviously intentions. I know that they're starting to center in on some of those intentions and possible motives. But the good news is that the 45,000 homes and businesses that initially lost power in this finally do have their power back. And this started on Saturday night. And all the way until tonight, Wednesday evening, some of these people were without power. Now, there is some discussion online, threads involving the writings by extremists on some online forums that basically are encouraging attacks on critical infrastructure. And the other apparently talks about disrupting LGBTQ plus events across the nation. So as if we didn't have enough to worry about, everything that has already happened, that has been well documented on this program, is now taken to a completely different, a whole nother level, an extreme level, we can say. Attacking critical infrastructure, bridges, highways, maybe even mass transit. I'm not throwing any ideas out there. Obviously, these people who have plans of doing this and have written about it online, trust me, they already have a plan of doing so, and they're not going to be listening to my show for me to give them any ideas. But I'm just saying, if you're hitting critical infrastructure, like bridges, like highways, like mass transit, like airports, you very, very quickly start to cripple the country. Because as if the supply chain and the inflation and everything else isn't bad enough, just imagine having one more problem thrown in there, which is you have the goods, but there's no way to get it there because that bridge has just been blown up. Our final segment tonight coming up on Into the Paranormal, 503-506-0396, inside or outside North America. That's 503-506-0396, or ITP51 on Skype. It's open lines. I'm Jeremy Scott, Into the Paranormal. We'll be right back.
Paranormal News. An archive of research on unidentified aerial phenomenon has been announced in the Albuquerque area. The archive is said to include case files from officials and civilians, research notes, audio and video recordings, photographs, microfilm, along with digital and physical artifacts. It includes documents from the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, the Center of UFO Studies, and Dr. J. Allen Hynek's personal files from Project Blue Book. Researcher Philip Mantle tells Paranormal News he's donating his work to the archive.
It basically contains what UFO case files I've researched, government documents, photographs, 35mm slides. So I'm getting to that stage in life where I had to make a decision what to do with them. And they'll be heading to David Marler later this year.
The National UFO Historical Record Center plans to establish the largest historical archive of its kind. Meanwhile, there is still no sign of a declassified version of the latest U.S. Defense Intelligence report on UAP that was supposed to be released more than a month ago. I'm George Henry, Paranormal News.
To the paranormal.
I'm Jeremy Scott, 503-506-0396, inside or outside North America, and on Skype it is ITP51. It is, George was talking about in the newscast, where is the report? I was expecting this second one to be sometime before the end of the year, and it very well could happen. However, the information that we had is that the second hearing, the one mandated through legislation to happen twice a year, after the May one that happened somewhat before the people, before then glowing behind closed doors, this one happening behind closed doors, and then we're supposed to get a summary, a declassified version of what the officials talked about behind closed doors. So a public one once a year, and then they have the right to go meet in private after that, which is what happened in May of this year. And then 6 months later, they are to meet behind closed doors again and deliver a report to the people about the UAP subject. We have not gotten that report. The information that we had was that it was to come right around Halloween, and it is now December 7th, and there is still no report to speak of, no summary, no nothing. What does this say? Does this say that they are hiding information? Well, that could be one possible explanation, although I would find it very, very odd if now we were given all the answers when we have been waiting for them for decades. So I'm very, very skeptical, of course, of that being an explanation. However, maybe there is a lot of classified information that was discussed in that briefing. And if that was the case, perhaps they're having a hard time coming up with something that they can release to the public, which actually could be a good thing. If they're struggling to come up with answers, to come up with something that they can give us, something that we will accept, then maybe that's a good thing. If there's a lot of classified information that would indicate maybe some sort of identification of the threat that we're dealing with, and we're talking about the UAP threat, then perhaps the wait might be worth it. But if it is just more of the same, which would be stalling and redacting, and then making folks spend the resources to go through Freedom of Information Act the processes to get the information that they should be forthcoming with. It's very, very frustrating. So I hope that that is not what happens. 503-506-0396. 503-506-0396. Inside or outside North America, if you have any thoughts on where this UAP report is, this second report that we were supposed to receive that we have still not received. And who knows what it might indicate. And I guess we can't really judge whether or not the wait was worth it until we get it in our hands. And there's just been nothing for the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks as far as where that report is. However, there are some developments on the UAP front, as we heard about in the news with George Henry, in the fact that there is an archive that is in the works to be set up in the Albuquerque area, which will include a lot of the evidence that has been compiled by researchers who have had to go to a great length to recover this information, which again is very, very telling. They don't want to hand over the information. They, being the government, do not want to be forthcoming with this information, because then we might look at them as less than whatever we did before. The nice way of saying it. But look, those of us who know that our government has been quiet on this subject for decades, we already know it. There are, the minority who are catching up to that, and we welcome them to this revelation that we have been misled and that our government has covered up what it knows about this subject and what about credible witnesses have encountered over time. And there are many, many examples out there of active cover-ups that have gone on because this information has gotten a little bit too close to home. It's reached the wrong people. Well, I think those days are behind us. Everything is seemingly being recorded these days. And the government can no longer say, we know nothing about this. And they can no longer release documents where you can't read but just a couple of words per page. It just can't continue. And I think we're making headway on the process. I don't know, though, what this release of the second hearing held by the Congressional Committee on the UAP subject this year. I don't know what that is going to bring to pass. So only time will tell as far as that is concerned, friends. for those who are interested in chatting with us over on our podcast Ultimate, for subscribers, you also get access to the shows about a week before everybody else. So if you've been wondering where the podcast has been, it's been over on Podcast Plus Ultimate, just as this podcast will be up on Podcast Plus Ultimate on YouTube immediately, right after this is done, because it's streaming there live right now on Podcast Plus Ultimate. So it archives itself. So you can go over there and listen to this show. So until we talk to you next time, I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I know we're going to head into the holidays and some of you are going to get really, really busy and you may be stepping away from this program, but we always know you'll come back. And so in that case, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Kwanzaa, every holiday in between there as well. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. Good night, everyone. And Hanukkah. I know I'm going to hear about it. And Hanukkah. We'll be right back.